You are listening to the Delane MD Podcast, the podcast for health professionals struggling to lose weight. If you are a physician, nurse, PA, or other clinician looking to permanently shed those pounds, stop overeating, feel better, and prevent disease, Dr. Vaughn offers practical strategies and tools to overcome the many challenges that undermine weight loss efforts. Now here's your host, Dr. Delane Vaughn.
Hello and welcome to the Delane MD Podcast. So today we are going to be talking about intermittent fasting. Before we get started talking about intermittent fasting, however, I'd like to say thank you for everybody who's listening to the podcast and also welcome you guys to leave me feedback. You can do that in the comments section of your podcasting app. You can also do that through my website, DelaneMD.com, or through Facebook at DelaneMD. So I like to joke that fasting is the other F word. People think of it as starvation. People think of it as all sorts of bad things. The reality of it is that fasting has been a part of the human experience for all of mankind. If you think about it, we all naturally fast at night when we sleep. When we get up in the morning and we eat breakfast, that's why it's called breakfast. It breaks your fast. So fasting is a natural part of the human experience. Certainly, tens of thousands of years ago when food was scarce, we all fasted and we fasted frequently. Also, most mammals experience fasting when they are ill. Most mammals will not eat when they're ill. Human beings don't like to feel crappy and they know they get an easy dopamine hit when they eat. So a lot of times when we are ill, we will eat. That's not necessarily a natural part of our physiology. Certainly, fasting has been used in spiritual arenas for many, many thousands of years. The idea that fasting is somehow unnatural or bad for the human body is a myth. When looking at intermittent fasting and weight loss, the first concept that's important is pretty straightforward. If we're not eating, we're obviously going to allow our body to utilize the energy that's already stored on it. So if you think back tens of thousands of years ago, our bodies were not consuming food for 12 to 18 hours a day. We would have episodes where we would eat, and those episodes were separated by episodes where we fasted or didn't eat just because food wasn't readily available. The human body was perfectly designed to manage this. We are made to consume in discrete periods of time, interspersed by periods of time when we do not eat, also known as fasting. Why fasting works is because it allows our insulin levels to drop. When we eat, our body produces insulin. We've talked about this before when we talk about carbohydrates, sugars, and processed foods. These macronutrients cause our insulin levels to rise. When our insulin level is elevated, it allows our cells to take up nutrients and energy in the form of sugar. That sugar then gets utilized by our cells. When our cells don't actively need that energy, our body stores it. The body stores it in the liver. Once the liver is full, the body makes new fat. If we're not eating, we're not releasing insulin. If we're not releasing insulin and there's no insulin in our body taps into the stored energy we already have in the form of fat, and it burns that for energy that's needed. Not eating or fasting also allows our bodies to normalize our blood sugar. So in the case of type 2 diabetes, that is a disease not of insulin deficiency, but of insulin resistance. So your body is resistant to the effects of insulin. When we eat too many carbohydrates over a long period of time, your body incrementally increases the amount of insulin that's available in your system. Over time, and with frequent eating, as we do in America, your body never lets that insulin level come back down to zero because we continuously stimulate the production of insulin. That continuous stimulation and overproduction because we're eating processed foods and carbohydrates and sugars allows our insulin level to get incrementally higher. When our insulin level becomes so high that it overwhelms our body stops responding to it. Our cells stop responding to it. It no longer responds by bringing sugar into our cells and utilizing it for energy. Partly because our cells are already full of energy and have no current needs for energy, but also because we have persistently exposed the cell to insulin, causing it not to be responsive anymore. I think many of you have heard me use the kindergartner analogy. Having a room full of 50 kindergartners is a noisy room. There's what my dad used to call a dull roar that constantly goes on in that room because kids are making noise. If you have 50 kindergartners in a room, it's very hard for you to pay attention to what every kindergartner is saying. One kindergartner would have to make a lot of noise to get your attention, a noise level above that dull roar. What that does overall to the room is it causes that dull roar to be even louder, that baseline noise level to be even louder. That causes the next kid that needs your attention to have to yell even louder, again, ratcheting up that level of noise, that underlying dull roar, the baseline level of noise, a little bit higher each time some child has to get your attention. The answer to the problem with the kindergartners is never adding more kindergartners and never adding more noise. The answer with the problem with the kindergartners is to allow their parents to one by one come pick them up. Once you're down to two or three kindergartners, you can hear every noise they're making. You know what they're thinking about doing, what they're talking about doing, and you can be very reactive to them. It's the same thing with your insulin and diabetes. When you have so much insulin floating around in your system, your body cannot respond to it. The answer is not to add more insulin, although that's what we do as doctors. The answer is to stop stimulating your body's production of insulin. Let that insulin burn off until it gets to a point of zero, and then your body becomes responsive, or what we call sensitive, to it again. And that also allows your body to get out of the storage mode and into the fat burning mode. Your body has to see that there is no insulin around before it will tap into that stored energy that we have on our body in the form of fat. So that's how fasting allows our bodies to normalize our blood sugars. By not reintroducing or constantly introducing foods to our body, it allows our body to utilize and burn off the insulin that's already in our system. Once that gets to zero, our body starts to become more sensitive, more responsive to the insulin that's there, and it also allows us then to normalize our blood sugars. So now I want to take a look at how our body is affected both by eating and then by the fasting process. In general, again, as our food intake goes to zero, our bodies drop our insulin levels, and that switches us from this energy storage mode to a fat burning mode to maintain the cellular energy needs that our body has. This doesn't happen with calorie reduction diets. And why that is because if you're counting calories or reducing calories, you can spread out 1,000 calories or 1,200 calories or 600 calories all throughout the day. So if you're eating six small meals a day, but still staying below the 1,200 calorie mark, you are still stimulating your insulin over that six small meals per day. So if you're doing it every 2 to 3 hours, what that looks like is for 12 to 18 hours a day, you are continuously stimulating your insulin. That's why calorie reduction diets, they will work for a period of time, but they will not work long-term because you never lower that insulin level. The insulin is actually responsible for your weight set point in your body. And again, you have to lower that insulin level very low before you can adjust that weight set point. So as far as your body goes, when you're eating, you have your eating phase, you intake food, your insulin level rises, as we've talked about. And then we store energy. We either use energy immediately for our immediate cellular needs, or we store up the energy, again, initially in the liver, and then we make new fat. So after 6 to 24 hours of fasting, your insulin levels begin to fall. And then you start to use the stored energy in your liver. That goes first, and that happens somewhere in that 6 to 24 hour range. Once you get to a point where your liver doesn't have a ton of energy stored in it, then you can start tapping into your fat storage. What I mean by that is after weeks and weeks and weeks of doing intermittent fasting, you're going to have less and less and less energy stored in your liver, where that 6 to 24 hour period where we burn off the energy stored in our liver becomes closer to 6 hours and not the 24 hour period. So then you start tapping into your fat stores somewhere far before that 24-hour period, closer to that 6-hour period. At the 24 to 48 hour mark after fasting starts, the liver starts to make glucose from amino acid and glycerol. The glycerol actually comes from your fat storage. In a healthy non-diabetic person, blood glucose levels fall but are maintained within a normal range because of this process. At 24 hours, the body starts to use triglycerides directly as energy sources in the form of ketone bodies. These can cross over through the brain barrier and be utilized by the brain also as energy. 72 hours to 5 days after fasting starts, there are high levels of growth hormone to maintain your muscle mass and lean tissue. Your energy needs for basic metabolic activities are met by these fatty acids and ketones. Your body also releases adrenaline to maintain its metabolic rate. So I think it's important to point out here that even in long-term fasts, that your body does not start burning muscle for energy or to meet your metabolic needs. Your body is an efficient piece of machinery. It will burn the stuff that it has stored long before it will burn anything that your body actually needs. That wouldn't make any sense, nor would it have benefited us in an evolutionary sense. It's also important, again, to point out that this does not occur in calorie reduction diets because your body never gets to a point where the insulin levels drop low enough that your body starts to burn fat instead of burning the easily accessible energy that you're eating every 2 to 3 hours. So the hormonal changes you'll experience when you fast is your insulin level drops, as we've discussed already, allowing you to burn the energy you have stored in the form of fat on your body. Other hormone changes that happen, growth hormone is released, which we know will help you increase the use of fats for fuel, and adrenaline is released, which allows you to have an increased metabolic rate even in times of not consuming food. This makes tons of sense in our bodies in a pre-modern world. If we needed to have food available to us before we could expend the energy to go out and hunt and gather food, we would have never survived in times of food scarcity. So some people ask me about things like vitamins or electrolyte abnormalities during fasting. And we certainly will see some electrolyte abnormalities, but not typically in intermittent fasting. Typically, the electrolyte abnormalities occur when people fast for a very long time, months to years. And I'm going to tell you a story that's going to seem a little outrageous, but was documented in the 1960s. So a simple multivitamin, if that's a concern you have, a simple multivitamin is perfect for you. I would stay away from chewables because they tend to have added sugar or sweetener in them to make them palatable. So the story I'm going to share with you was a medically supervised case of fasting from the 1960s. A gentleman started out his 382-day fast weighing 456 pounds. He fasted for 382 days under the supervision of physicians. His end weight was 180 pounds, which he maintained comfortably for the rest of his life, as far as I know. Again, he was a 27-year-old gentleman. This was done in the 1960s, but it was medically supervised. What they found is that initially he did have some electrolyte abnormalities. They did add in some supplementation of his electrolytes through vitamins, but outside of that, he had no issues with his fasting. He primarily sustained himself on water, coffee, and tea. He did occasionally, in the 382 days, have a touch of sugar or some milk in his tea. But outside of that, he typically was on coffee, water, and tea. And apparently the sugar and the milk in his tea, he didn't add until the final few weeks of his fasting. At 5 years later, he'd kept off almost all the weight he lost, weighing in at 196 pounds. I don't use this as an example of what I think everybody should do. I use this as an example of what the human body is capable of and made for. Again, there's no sense in burning off muscle, the lean body mass that you need when you have stored energy. That would not be an efficient life form. And our body certainly wants to be efficient. So fasting regimens that I promote are short-term fasting or intermittent fasting. So that's what we're talking about, the majority of what I talk about. People will do hours to days of fasting. So again, you start seeing benefits at, you know, 12 to 24 hours. So fasting regimens anywhere between there. People will do 16 hours of fasting with 8 hours of eating. I recommend having discrete meals during your eating hours. Do not graze for 8 hours because, again, you're going to get this insulin spike. You're going to get this insulin level to go up, and then you're going to be in storage mode for 8 hours. If you have discrete meals, your insulin level will spike up, but then it will gradually come down. Depending on how close your meals are, it may come down to zero. It may not. Some people will do days, multiple days of fasting. I think the longest I've ever done is like a 3-day fast, but one of my coworkers did do a 7-day fast. No problems with it. You actually find that you feel pretty good during your fast. Most of the hunger issues are issues around hours 12 to 24. Once people get past that, they find that they feel pretty good. Again, you can fast for days and maybe even weeks. I think that if you're going to do a fast that's longer than a week, you probably need to be evaluated by a doctor and maybe even monitored by a doctor. Some people will do month-long fasting periods. That's not uncommon, and it's frequently recommended in patients who have type 2 diabetes. This is one of the quickest ways to normalize your insulin and your blood sugars. So a lot of times, experts in fasting will make that recommendation. I do want to clarify what I'm talking about when I talk about fasting. When I discuss fasting, I typically am referring to nothing except water, unsweetened tea, and black unsweetened coffee. Those are the things that I recommend folks consume during their fast. As folks are getting accustomed to fasting, a lot of times people will utilize what's called a fat fast. You can look this up on the internet and find information about it. But that is utilizing straight fat with your coffee, with your tea. I guess you could eat butter straight if you really wanted to, but I couldn't do that. Utilizing straight fats, no carbohydrates, no sugars, no vegetables, no fruits with them. That does offer you a little bit of satiety, and the insulin production with fat is very, very low. So most people do not break their fasts that way. An example of this is bulletproof coffee. I've tried it. It's a recipe you can find online for adding fat to your coffee. I don't like it. That amount of fat makes me have a lot of heartburn, so I don't do it. Another example is adding heavy whipping cream, the stuff that you get in the dairy aisle at the store. Adding that to your coffee or tea, again, will give you a little satiety and help you last longer in your fast, typically not breaking your fast. I recommend 1 to 2 tablespoons of fat in any of your drinks or during your fasting hours. The other thing some folks will add to their fasting regimen is bone broth. Not the broth you get at the store, but bone broth made by going to the butcher and getting a bone from typically a beef bone and boiling it to broth. You get a lot of fat and a lot of marrow nutrients from that. It's actually very healthy. It doesn't taste bad. I don't use it. I know someone who's made it. They enjoy it quite a bit. They also do longer fasts than I do. So those are some things that you can do that, one, give you some satiety and also gives you some electrolytes so that you can normalize those electrolytes if you're worried about that. You can also, again, use regular daily multivitamins. That's fine with your fasting. So if you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like to have me address related to intermittent fasting, I'd love to hear it. Send me a message through DelaneMD.com, send me a message on Facebook, or leave me a comment at the bottom of this podcast. I hope you guys all have a great week, and I will be back here with you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to the Delane MD podcast. More podcasts are available at DelaneMD.com. If you're ready to permanently lose weight and prevent weight-related disease, contact Dr. Delane Vaughn by visiting DelaneMD.com or on Facebook at DelaneMD.